Hey, Matt Rothschild here, host of the Wisconsin Forward podcast all across the Civic Media Radio Network and at civicmedia.us. For the next several episodes of the Wisconsin Forward podcast, I'm going to be interviewing Democratic candidates for governor. With me now is candidate Missy Hughes, who headed up the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation in Governor Evers' cabinet. Before that, she was an executive at Organic Valley for 17 years. Missy Hughes, welcome to the Wisconsin Forward podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to finally meet you and to have you right here on the podcast. You know, I've hired people in the past. I know you've hired people probably. And I always have started my interview questions out with the most obvious question. Why do you want this job? So why do you want to be governor?
Well, it's fair to say this is the strangest job interview I've ever done. I've never run for office before, but I decided to throw my hat in the ring for governor because I feel right now my experience of working in the dairy and manufacturing industry of Wisconsin, of working for 6 years for Governor Evers doing economic development, gives me the skill set that we need at this time to build our economy, to help Wisconsinites be able to make ends meet, and to really be able to think about how do we move Wisconsin forward.
Well, it's a big jump, never having run for office before, to decide to run for governor. What made you make that decision or take that leap? Because it seems imposing to me.
Well, right now, I feel like so many of my neighbors, of my friends, are really, frankly, disgusted with what's happening in politics. They have heartburn anytime you talk about what's happening in Washington, and they just really want to disengage. I have the energy for it. I'm excited to dive in. I'm excited to work hard and roll my sleeves up and try to do everything I can to help Wisconsin. And so when many people are stepping back, I wanted to step in and say, let me try and help solve some of the problems we're facing.
You know, I went to your website. I saw the video you put out. You say, I'm not a politician. That's the point. Explain that a little bit.
Well, you know, what I see in politics today is one-upmanship, is gamesmanship, a lot of competition rather than a lot of cooperation. And I think as a politician, you really build those muscles to fight. You really say, you know, what can I win? How can I put the other side down? Yeah, for myself, coming from working for farmers, coming from working for a cooperative and doing economic development, I want to find solutions. And I don't find that politicians these days are necessarily driven towards solutions. They're driven towards the fight. And that's why I think it's really important to point out that I am not a politician. I've never run for office. I'm a business person. I'm a mom. And that combination means I got to find my way through and find solutions.
Finding solutions, finding cooperation. In this era of politics with Donald Trump and how polarized things have been, actually in Wisconsin with Scott Walker and how polarized things got there in 2010, it's kind of a tall task.
It feels like a tall task, but I'll tell you, when I talk to community leaders all around the state, just something that I did as secretary, I traveled all around the state talking with community leaders about what they wanted to do in their communities to make their communities better. People are ready to roll up their sleeves and work with whoever shows up. If you show up with 10 volunteers, I don't care what color shirt you're wearing. I want you on the team and I want you to help me make my community better. And so while it seems like things are very divisive at the local, at the neighborhood and community level, people are really wanting to work together because they can control what they can control and they can solve what they can solve.
You know, there's this big argument within the Democratic Party right now. Do we just try to get the base out do a kind of base forward campaign, or we continue to try to talk to the independents and to vanishing moderate Republicans that they should come around and vote Democratic? Where are you on that?
You know, I just want to talk to Wisconsinites. They're the ones who ultimately are going to vote both in August in our primary and then next November in our general election. I want to make sure that they understand that my goal is to make their lives easier. When they're struggling to make ends meet, when they can't pay for childcare or make their mortgage payment, that's the stress that I want to come in and solve for Wisconsinites. And, you know, like I said, I don't necessarily care what shirt you're wearing, whether it's red or blue, but I know that most people in Wisconsin are wearing Wisconsin colors and want Wisconsin to win.
Well, how do you solve that stress problem, that economic stress problem? You mentioned, you know, pay the mortgage or pay the rent, and childcare is through the roof. Health insurance through the roof, car insurance is through the roof. How do you make life more affordable for Wisconsinites?
What I want to do is create a Main Street economy. And when I say that, I'm talking about creating opportunity right in your community. You should have access to good jobs. You should have jobs that pay good wages and help you sustain your family. But you also need access to affordable childcare, because if your child's not in a safe place, you can't get to work. You need access to affordable elder care. With our demographics, so many of us are caring for our parents. We need to be able to take care of them and your own self, your own health care. You also need education, right, where you can live and access it. And that means being able to either upskill yourself or making sure that our kids have access to excellent public schools. All of that happens when you can pay your bills, when you have businesses that are expanding, that are coming to your community, and when they're creating good jobs. So it's really about that financial stability and the infrastructure to support you in your community.
You mentioned wages. Are you for lifting the minimum wage, and if so, to what level?
You know, what I would say for lifting the minimum wage, it is desperately low in Wisconsin right now, $7 or $8 at this point, and the market is at $15 or $16 an hour. Let's move minimum wage up to the market. I don't think that government necessarily should be above where the market is, but certainly, you know, no one is hiring at this point and retaining those workers for less than $15 an hour. So it makes sense to say that's what you need to provide in order to be a business, doing business here in Wisconsin, receiving the benefits of being here in Wisconsin. Do your part by paying that $15 an hour.
And childcare, how would you make childcare more affordable? You mentioned that.
Well, right now, childcare is really viewed as a private sector business. And so every childcare provider is stuck in this situation of trying to pay for their employees and their employees' benefits, and at the same time recognizing that their parents are really stretched to be able to afford that childcare. We need to treat childcare as a public good, which means everybody needs to come to the table, which is both the childcare provider, the parents, and industry and government. We need to have everybody there saying, in order for Wisconsin to succeed, we need to have everyone having skin in the game and providing access to affordable, quality childcare for those families during that time that they need it.
And that might require government funding, right?
It will require government funding, but it also needs employers to be at the table. Quick Trip out in my neck of the woods is building a childcare right now for its employees, recognizing that in order to keep its employees, it needs to make sure that there's accessible childcare. We see businesses all around the state doing that. That's not the only solution, but it's really innovative, and we need to look for those innovative solutions to help fill the gap. Right now, we have childcare deserts all around the state. It is, I think we have one in two childcare children don't have access to good childcare. And so we need to make sure that we're filling in those deserts first and then providing more options to parents all around the state.
Because it's really high. The price of childcare for parents is through
the roof. Oh, it's incredible. And the stress that that's causing to young families, and really what it's doing is pulling women out of the workforce. Women are staying home to take care of their children because it's a choice between how much do I make a month and what's our mortgage payment or what's our rent payment. And it's, you know, it just becomes untenable when it's so expensive. You just stay home and take care of your kids.
Yeah, if you're just making a tiny bit more by working, once you subtract the childcare, you might as well stay home with your kid.
Right.
I think that's the equation they're playing with. So schools, you mentioned schools. Higher ed is one issue. There are all these cutbacks on the two-year college system within the University of Wisconsin system. Where are you on that?
Well, the university system, let's talk about the university system. It is such an incredible gem for this state. And as I talk to companies who are interested in expanding in Wisconsin or coming to Wisconsin, the number one selling point I have is our university system and the graduates coming out of there. If you talk to any of our business leaders in Wisconsin, they're here because of Wisconsin's incredible workers. And often those are university graduates who know how to solve problems, they're team players, and they stay here in Wisconsin. So we need to think about the university as an incredible economic engine for the state, and we need to invest in it with that in mind. By disinvesting in the university, we are not only hurting an investment we've made for the last number of decades, but we're also hurting our future because companies are looking and saying, well, if you're not going to invest in your workforce, we're not going to. We're going to go someplace else that is. when we talk about our public schools, obviously we are in a very, very complicated situation in Wisconsin with vouchers and public schools and all that is happening around school funding. Communities are being divided again and again over referendums and how those are being voted on. So we need to take a step back and think about school funding and do that in a way that really keeps in mind the primary principle, which is that every student should have access to excellent public schools within their community, right where they live. Once we have that as an agreement, we can also start to talk about how do we hold our schools accountable. One of the things that I'm really seeing a thread of agreement around is this idea that we need to hold our voucher schools accountable. They're receiving public funds. Right now, there's really no transparency into that, and there's no standard set for what they're doing with those dollars. That is a place where, you know, whether you are pro-voucher or pro-public school, there is agreement. There has to be accountability.
Do you think the state has done too much for the voucher schools so far, and the voucher schools have drained our public education resources?
I think that we haven't held true to something that I believe is a longstanding Wisconsin tradition, that we have excellent public schools. If you look back at funding, we used to be number one in the Midwest per pupil for funding, and we're now fallen to number 12 out of the 12, number 7 out of the 12 states that we look at when we consider the Midwest. So we're losing there. And so we need to get back to a fundamental agreement that we must have excellent public schools in order to succeed, in order to be leaders in our country. And so we have to get that funding back. And that's, I think, a starting point. And then we can start to build from there.
I know in the last budget discussion, there is a lot of unhappiness on the Democratic side that the budget did not provide more funding for public schools. If you'd been governor, would you have vetoed that whole budget as some of those advocates were asking Governor Evers to do?
Oh, I'm not going to play backseat driver for Governor Evers. You know, having been in his cabinet for three budgets, I know how difficult that process is, especially when you have a Republican legislature that takes your proposals and throws them in the bin as soon as they come in the door. So I am not going to play, backseat driver to that. But what I will say is that I think Wisconsinites are frustrated that there's a $4 billion surplus in Madison and that the Republicans have refused to invest that back. When you pay your taxes as a Wisconsinite, I believe that you say, I want these dollars circulating in our economy. I want them getting used, not sitting in a bank account in Madison. And I think that that's where the real frustration comes around the budget process. Again and again and again, the Republicans have refused to take our dollars and invest them back in the state.
Well, the question about the surplus then, I mean, Robin Voss would say, let's just give the surplus or half the surplus back to the taxpayers. They're the one who paid in. What's your reaction to that?
I didn't pay that money so that it would then get paid back to me in tiny little increments. I paid that money so it would be improving our schools, improving our roads, investing in our universities. That is not the bargain that I made with Robin Voss. The bargain I made was invest those dollars smartly across the state. That's what I'm here for as a Wisconsin taxpayer. And it frustrates me that it then becomes, well, we'll just pay that back to you after we've held on to it for a few years. Hmm.
You served in Governor Evers' cabinet for several years. He's at the end of his administration. Do you have a reflection on Governor Evers the governor or Governor Evers the man?
Governor Evers is an incredible role model for me. He led with his values and continues to lead with his values. Every day, every time I traveled with him, every cabinet meeting, I knew where he stood when it came to his values and trying to navigate an incredibly difficult situation, first with the pandemic, then with the Trump administration, and always with the Republican legislature. But he did that with dignity. He did it with honesty. And it was always so impressive to me that I was able to work so closely with a man like Governor Evers.
I've never interviewed him, so I don't know. I just knew him from afar. And the thing that struck me was, here is a guy who was just so authentic. I mean, he never pretended to be anything he wasn't. And you talk about not being a politician, though he was a politician. He didn't act like a typical politician, and actually didn't have typical politician skills in the debate sector. He wasn't a great public speaker, wasn't a great debater. How are you going to prepare for a debate? I don't know if you were you in debate class or club in high school or college. You're going to have to do some debates yourself.
Well, I am actually a lawyer by training, so that probably helps a little bit.
Go.
And you know, when you do mock trials and things like that, and moot court, you get questions thrown at you, and it's actually super fun. I was just talking with another lawyer about that you catch the question and you try to do the best that you can with it. So I feel that I can hold my own. I certainly have a lot of issues that are working across the state that I need to continue to learn about. I was very focused on building the economy. I continue to be focused on that. And so I look forward to learning about, you know, some other issues. But having sat in the governor's cabinet for 6 years, I feel like I do have a good working knowledge of the things that are happening in Wisconsin.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Trump and what you do as governor with Trump there. Because, for instance, he's trying to nationalize the National Guard in some states. What if he said, if you're governor, you know, I'm taking the Wisconsin National Guard and sending them to Portland, Oregon, or wanted the National Guard to come out in Milwaukee or Madison, and you don't want that to happen? How would you play that?
You know, what infuriates me about this National Guard conversation is I know many people who serve in the National Guard. They do that with the intention of being ready to help Americans when there's a challenge, when there's a problem, when there's an emergency or a natural disaster. And so to be used as a political pawn is so disrespectful of the service that these folks have offered. And, you know, when we think about keeping our economy going steady, these are leaders in our businesses. These are small business owners and leaders in our larger businesses. These are people who every day are helping to keep Wisconsin's economy strong and moving forward. And by disrupting their lives and by disrupting their families, you're adding instability and stress to their lives. And I just think the overall effort is so disrespectful of what these folks have dedicated themselves to help take care of their neighbors and us here in Wisconsin.
So you'd what would your response be? Would you take them to court, or what would you try to do there?
I whatever tools I had available, most likely going to court. Unfortunately, that's where we find ourselves. I always say nothing good happens in court. As a lawyer, I still believe that, but I would, certainly fight at every corner to keep Wisconsinites from getting pulled out of their families as political pawns.
Yeah, well, what's your view of ICE in Wisconsin? I know there's several sheriffs, several counties that are cooperating with ICE with these raids that we see. What would you tell those sheriffs?
Well, what I would say is in my hometown out in western Wisconsin, we had a rumor come through the town that ICE was coming. And I know several restaurants that shut down their operations, several farms that took measures to protect their workers. The disruption that came just from that rumor was outrageous and so disheartening. And the idea that we are allowing in any part of the country, people to jump out of vans and grab people off of the street is bananas. And so, again, we have to think about what are we doing every day that helps improve Wisconsinites' lives? And what's happening with ICE right now is certainly not one of those things. It's, first of all, very disruptive to the immigrants who are being attacked by ICE. It's very disruptive to the businesses who want to employ those folks, to their families, to the schools where children are who are seeing this happen. It is all just, again, a political pawn to invoke fear and stress and put people back on their heels.
It's got to be ruinous for the dairy industry, too, isn't it?
The dairy industry is, so struggling already. Right now, milk is at some of the lowest prices. The farmers in my part of the state, farmers had to sow under their soybeans because there was no place to put them, and they've lost money that way. And the dairy industry, 80% of the dairy industry works with immigrants as their farm workers. And so, they are continuing to make sure that their workers are protected, that they know their rights, that they're able to help their workers understand their rights. And again, it's a disruption that we don't need to have and that is really impacting people's lives.
It's kind of crazy the way Trump has turned our politics so toxic. What's your just response to what Donald Trump has been doing?
Well, I think that the goal of what's happening with the federal government right now is to instill fear and stress again and again and again. Every day, they're waking up saying, how can I stress people out more? I mean, it must be intentional that way because they are having such success at dividing us and making it so all we can think about is kind of this fight or flight. How can I make ends meet? How can I have Thanksgiving dinner in a week? How can I pay for these things? And by doing that, when you put people in that survivalist mode, they stop working together. They stop thinking about how can I do something for my community? How can I even help my neighbor? Really, we're getting to the point where it feels like, can you go talk to your neighbors? Can you help them? No, I can't afford that or I can't do that. And that is so core to Wisconsin's values of helping each other and helping, you know, your neighbor in a time of stress. And now we can't even do that because of what's happening in the federal government. And so as I approach things, it is how do you relieve that stress? How do you make things not so hard for Wisconsinites? Every day, you got to roll up your sleeves right away and have impact. What I can show from my career, both working for Organic Valley and for Wisconsin, is creating jobs, having impact, getting projects done in all 72 counties. And this is what we need for the next governor.
An issue I've worked a lot on over the last 10 years when I was over at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign was gerrymandering. What's your view to solve the problem of partisan gerrymandering?
Well, you know, I think that we have to get back to the civics and the understanding of how our democracy works and understanding that everyone should have a meaningful vote. And gerrymandering is a precise effort to avoid everybody having a meaningful vote. And so as we look in Wisconsin, Governor Evers did a tremendous job of navigating through that and finding fair maps. And we've seen the reset that is already happening in Wisconsin. Once again, Wisconsin can be a thought leader in demonstrating this is how you get it done. This is how you move through this and have a fair map where everyone has the opportunity to vote. We still have some work to do on our congressional districts, and that'll be, you know, the next phase of our conversation around gerrymandering. What's happening in the rest of the country, you can see, I think, that people are starting to back away from the Texas move and say, okay, maybe that's not what, you know, that feels like a nuclear option. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that right now. I understand Indiana has backed away from that effort, and I think people are starting to realize that that is not what we represent.
Do you think Governor Newsom was right to push gerrymandering in California?
I think Governor Newsom did a good job of fighting fire with fire to say, okay, if you're going to do that, we're going to do this. And by putting up that stand, that's why I think around the rest of the country, we're seeing people say, okay, this is not the fight we want to have. Let's back down from that.
I saw Governor Evers say, don't even ask me that. It's too hard a question because he spent so many years fighting gerrymandering. He couldn't support gerrymandering in California.
Yeah, it's a conundrum. And again, this is, you know, where the federal government is pushing us is to these places where, you know, we either have to punch back or give in. And that's just not where I want to be as a politician. I want to find ways to work together, to build a muscle around cooperation, and to find ways that we can move forward together, because then it's not so easy to rip things apart into the future. If you have a coalition of people in the middle working together and working on things, you get away from this zigzag that we see, you know, where one day something's on, one day something off. And, you know, with Trump, it's even worse with tariffs and things like that. But generally, you know, when you see you go from administration to administration and things get, black one day and white the next day and red one day and blue the next day, it's very disruptive to our lives.
Another issue that's important to me anyway is money in politics. Ever since Citizens United and even before that, you're a lawyer, know the precedents go back to the 19th century. Corporations are people, money is speech. We just have, you know, people like Elon Musk throwing $200 million to try to elect this person or that person. How do we get at that problem?
You know, when I was growing up, we had the McCain-Feingold compromises and things like that. And we have gotten so far away from the issues around, you know, buying elections and things like that. We have gone very, very far to the land where things are not working at all. And I will say, you know, having spent now just 8 weeks inside politics running as a candidate, I can start to really understand and appreciate this challenge of needing to fundraise, needing to get your name out, and, you know, needing to have the resources to be able to do that. But also at the same time, how it is, you know, too important to have enough money to be able to do these things. And I think that there are models that we're seeing in other countries that we could start to think about if we could ever get to the table and have those conversations. But it feels like those very reasonable compromise, how do we do this best conversations are so far from us right now.
Well, what does it feel like being a politician? Because some politicians say, you know, basically I'm a glorified telemarketer. I'm on the phone 5-6 hours a day begging people for money.
Well, you know, it is a question of finding those resources so that I can share with people my vision for Wisconsin. And it's definitely a challenge, but it's also amazing because you get a chance to talk to people and ask them to invest in your campaign, to ask them to be a part of what you see as the future of Wisconsin. And when someone says, you know what, I will donate $50 to your campaign, it's pretty incredible, especially knowing how disenchanted people are right now. Knowing that, you know, somehow I have broken through and had that conversation and convinced somebody like, okay, I think she might be somebody I can agree with. And I think that piece of it is where I try and find the happiness and beauty, shall we say.
It's like knocking on doors. So, you're running against several other Democrats in the primary who are elected officials already. What lane do you see yourself in, you know, on that debate stage, for instance?
Well, I really represent someone from the private sector. I spent 17 years working in our dairy industry, which is a $55 billion industry in Wisconsin. Agriculture in general is over $100 billion. I also am intimately aware of our manufacturing industry and really understand that. I worked very closely with tourism while I was Secretary of Economic Development. So my experience from a business perspective and from an economic development perspective, and also being the only person from outside of Madison or Milwaukee, gives me a really unique profile for Wisconsinites to consider.
Is there anything I haven't asked you that you wanted me to ask, or anything you wanted to say that you haven't been able to say yet?
I guess I would just say that, you know, touching again, we started out talking about a little bit about the Driftless and living on the west side of the state. Having had the opportunity to live in rural Wisconsin, I actually grew up right outside of New York City. So I'm a city girl living in rural Wisconsin, and it's incredible to have raised my family there. We live outside of town. We've got 70 sheep and 2 donkeys. And when I'm able to drive up my driveway and see the beauty of Wisconsin, it reminds me how much I want this state to succeed. And my neighbors are so supportive of my efforts. And they think I'm a little crazy, but they are supportive of my willingness to jump in. And so it's an incredible state that we live in. And I'm so proud to even be sitting here having this conversation with you about potentially leading it.
How'd you come from New York to Wisconsin?
Oh, it's a long and circuitous route, but mostly I came because my husband worked for Organic Valley, and Organic Valley chose to also bring me on to help our farmers and to keep them on their farms. So it was a moment when we came to visit, and Tripp is my husband. He said, "What do you think?" And I said, "I love it. Let's go. Here we come."
And how long ago is that?
That was 23 years ago.
Oh, great. And if someone's interested in supporting your campaign, how can they do that?
They can go to missyforgovernor.com and find out more information. I would love helping to share this podcast and tell people to listen. I would love financial support, of course, as we discussed, and just helping me get out the word would be great.
Well, thanks so much for being my guest on the Wisconsin Forward podcast, and good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you again.
Well, that's going to have to be it for this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. I want to thank you for listening. I also want to thank my engineer and producer, Dom Lee, who's always great to work with. And I want to thank Sage Weil of Civic Media for giving me this platform. I'll be back in just a day or two with another Democratic candidate for governor, so stay tuned for that.